Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have you. It's another week, another weekend, and we are here in the midst of a crazy world doing crazy things. But you know what? All it is really revealing is that there are many hurting people out there, hurting from various issues that life throws their way. We have no idea the amount of pressure that someone can be under, and it just takes one thing to cause them to snap, to cause them to go and make the wrong decision. And this show is here and is designed to let someone know that who wants a better life, who's reaching for a dream, who's reaching for a goal, that despite the challenges, that God is very real. And if you don't give up and you place your trust in Him, He is absolutely able to bring you out to the other side. And tonight's guest knows all about that all too well. She is author. She is mother. She is wife. She's been a sister and cousin and friend. And yet at the same time, she's been a person who has suffered and experienced a whole lot of loss, from loved ones due to cancer to her son being sentenced to 16 years in prison. And that's a pain that no mother wants to face. And so she's here to speak to us about her experience and to share with us more from her book and what she has in store for you as you listen to her and as you read, as you read and hear the points from her book. And we'll get more into that as the show goes on. So Raji Ann Mabry, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
Well, I want to just make sure, is it okay if I call you Ann as we go through the show?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, and there's so much going on in the world today, and because of social media and the internet, we're seeing things live or, you know, firsthand, not just reading it in a newspaper, but we're actually seeing horrific images, and, you know, people are doing horrible things in response to that, and there's just this great sense of distress and hopelessness in the midst of people trying to also preach love and preach unity and peace, which is really possible in the Lord. But I want to step back and talk about your experience, but I want to put it in context. I want you to share with us, first and foremost, what does family mean to you, and how important is family to you?
Well, first of all, family means a lot to me and is very important. And you really don't realize how important you is until you lose one of your loved ones. But family is very important to me.
What comes to mind when you think about family? What kind of words and emotions come to you?
Love, togetherness, you know, doing things, having fun, talking about different issues that we might have in the family. And, you know, I hear a lot of people would say what happened in the family stays in the family. And to me, that's true somewhat. To me, it is. It's true somewhat. But I don't, when they say that, I don't know, do they mean just the people that live in the house or the whole entire family? So, my thing is, I feel that if I got a problem or if a problem going on in the house, if I'm real close to my family, I think I want to share that problem with my family, because I'm the type of person, if I get upset, it shows all over my face. So I just feel like if I got a problem, that I can share with my family because of the love that we share.
Right, right. And so you're not saying just those, you know, mother, father, brother, sister, but extended family as well. And you come from that kind of large extended cousins, uncles, all that great love. Can you share with us, just so that we can paint a picture, maybe one or two great family memories in your mind from your childhood or from your teenage years, or something you guys always did annually or together that just sticks out and it is just a beautiful memory for you?
Well, one thing I can say that we always did, and that was going to church every Sunday morning. Even if we didn't want to, Mama used to wake us up to go to Sunday school, and I'd be like, oh, Mom, I'm sleepy. She like, I don't care, you still going. And so that was that's how we grew up, in Sunday school and in church every single Sunday. And even after we got grown, I don't care what we did Saturday night, Mama was getting us up to go to church on Sunday morning. So, and that's just how it was in our household. You know, family dinners, we had family dinners. Every Sunday we'd go to Mama's house and eat dinner. Even up until my mom passed, we was all over there eating dinner, being grown.
That's the beauty. I love that Sunday dinner concept. I didn't learn about that until later on in life when I got married and married into a traditional Southern family. And that Sunday dinner was mandatory, but you wanted to go because, you know, it was fun. It was laughter. It was good food. And even when there was like little, you know, miscommunications or whatever, it still had family smothered all over it. So I get a sense of what you're sharing with us. So now, you know, you grow up, you become older, and you have your own family. You have your own children that you raise and you love. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, your son was sentenced to 16 years in prison. Can you talk to us a little bit about your son, and what was the situation that led to the arrest?
Well, in the beginning, instead of me parenting, I was more or less trying to be his friend because I had a big problem when my kids was mad at me because it was always we grew up under love, even in my family, and I didn't want my parents to be mad at me, so I understood how it feels to be mad at your child. So I tried my best not to be, you know, do things to make him angry. And instead of parenting, I was trying to be his best friend. And so he ended up getting a baby. Then he ended up dropping out of school. And then it just went downhill from there. He got to the point where I couldn't tell him nothing. I was always used to telling him not to be at certain places and coming at a certain time, but he still didn't pay me any attention because I guess he felt like he was so grown. And I remember this day quite so well. A couple of days before he got arrested, my mom had called him and told him she dreamed that the police had him. And he like, oh, Granny, that ain't true. You always coming up with stuff. And she said, nah, Steve, just be careful. So a couple of days after that, he usually would call me every single day from wherever he was. I don't know where he was at the particular time. And I kept saying, God, I was asking my daughter, have you heard from Steve yet? And she said, no, Ma. I said, I ain't like him not to call me every single day. And so the phone rang, and I looked at the number, and it was a Tennessee number. And I'm like, wow, who calling me from Tennessee? So I said, hello. And the lady said, can I speak to Miss Ann? I said, speaking. She said, I'm calling for your son. My son gave me the number to call for your son. I said, where my son at? She said, he in jail. I said, in jail? And she said, yes. I said, well, what happened? And then she said, I really don't know. You can put some money on the phone so he can call you. So I said, okay. And she gave me all the information to put the number on the phone. And about an hour after that, he called me. And so upset, and he was crying. I'm like, what happened? Tell me what happened. He said, Miles in the parking lot, I had went to a gas station. I went to give me a pop and a bag of Doritos, and I was in the parking lot, and the police messed with me, and they arrested me. I said, well, what did you do? He said, I didn't do nothing. I was just coming out the store. I said, well, what did you have? He said, I have some drugs. I said, oh, Lord, here we go. So, and they took him in, and so I said, well, Steve, how much drugs you had on? And he said, well, it wasn't a lot. I said, okay, so I'm just thinking he had a little bit, and we was going to pay his little money and get him on out. But come to find out, he was within 1,000 feet of a school zone. He didn't have that much drugs. It was like 0.5 grams of cocaine. But it wasn't a lot according to, you know, the lot of drugs. So, but the big problem was he was within 1,000 feet of a school zone, and that's where the time came in. And so he was back and forth from Tennessee from 2007. So he finally got sentenced November of 2009. And as we were sitting in the courtroom, I kept saying, Lord, I know you are able to do all things but fail. And I said, I also know you chastise us when we're doing wrong. So I sit there, and when the judge, you know, they found him guilty, and when the judge gave him his sentence, he said 16 years at 100%. I just like that. I had a heart attack. I was so upset. I had to go on disability for my job. I couldn't work. I couldn't eat. I might have cried for like 6 months. I might have cried for like 6 months. I just couldn't believe that.
How old was he when this happened?
24. Mm. Yep, he was 24. And I just couldn't believe it because my kids was my life. All I dreamed of was my kids, and I just couldn't believe this was going to happen to my family. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do? And because I couldn't stand the fact of him not only being in jail, but he was in Bluntville, Tennessee in jail, and that's about 5 or 6 hours from Georgia where we live. I tried to work. I tried to go to work, and I still couldn't work. I used to just cry at work, and my boss used to ask me what was wrong, and I tried to explain it to her. She said, well, I think you need to go see your doctor and get off from work, and that's what I did. I was totally depressed. Just couldn't, seemed like I just couldn't function at all. And then during that time, a year or so later, my grandson got sick. He had it must have been pneumonia without us knowing. We just thought it was a regular cold. We was back and forth with the doctor with him. And the last time we took him to the doctor, they said, okay, he was fine. I'm like, how could you be fine? You got a fever of 104. This baby's not fine. So we took him to the Children's Hospital of Atlanta, and they had to do emergency surgery on him. They had to scrape his lungs and get all the infection out. And the doctor told me and my daughter, if we hadn't have brought him in, he wouldn't have made it in the next couple hours. I'm like, Lord, what else? What's coming next?
I'm going to take a little break segment here and come back and talk about your mom, okay?
Shoulder, tell them ain't nothing but church.
Leaning on you.
Oh my.
Leaning on you.
When my friend walked on me down. I ain't got nobody else but you, Lord. Get a little rough sometime, Lord. Have to cry sometime. Lay awake at night and can't sleep sometime. But I want to ask you something here tonight. When your best friend walk away from you, family let you down. I need to know if I got some saints up in you. Know that you can always lean and depend on Jesus. Anybody know you can lean on him? Anybody know you can lean on him? You ought to tap somebody on the shoulder and tell them, lean on him.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we're back with Raji Ann Mabry, and I'm calling her Ann today, and we're having a chat, just to talk, mother to mother, family to family, about life and the many back-to-back trials that someone can face. And we started out with her sharing about her son, you know, just wanting to go on his own way in his own direction, finding himself, getting arrested, a sentence that really shouldn't have been severe but turned out to be severe, and what it has done to her emotionally, how it stripped her, how it even put her on disability to the point that she couldn't work because of the pain. And then that the issues just kept coming, you know, a nephew that was ill. But it didn't end there, Anne. Your mother received a diagnosis in 2011. Can you share with us how she found out going on with her and how the family found out?
Okay, I want to go back a little ways. My sister got diagnosed first, March of 2011, with breast cancer. So we was dealing with that. And then my mama was going back and forth over my sister's house, taking care of my sister and doing different things. And she said she felt a lump in her breast, and she said she wasn't going to pay no attention because she was trying to take care of my sister. And she said, so she finally went to the doctor, and I remember the day just as well. She called me, and she said, I went to the doctor, and the lump that I had, it was cancer. And I said, oh, no, Ma. She said, no, we're not going to talk like that. We're going to pray about it, and we're going to get healed. So I said, okay, I trust God. So we kept praying. We prayed about it. And then at that time, my sister was start getting better. My sister has
I just want to clarify so that I understand. Your sister also had breast cancer?
Yeah, uh-huh. She got diagnosed first. She got diagnosed March of 2011. She got diagnosed first.
Okay, so your sister got diagnosed with breast cancer first, and then your mom's busy taking care of her. She feels a lump, didn't really pay attention to it, but when she goes to the doctor, she finds out that she, too, has breast cancer, but keeps, like mothers do, she keeps her focus and her attention on taking care of her child, right?
Yes, she did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, continue. I just wanted to make sure I got it. Uh-huh.
Okay. And during the time, mom started getting worse. And I was kind of really upset because I have seen people with breast cancer, they get sick, and then they are healed, and then if they're going to die, they'll get sick and die again. But that never happened to my mom. She got sick, and she just kept on getting sick. But we still have faith, and we still believe. And I was told that when you ask God something like healing, it's up to him how he want to heal. And he did heal on the other side of the grave. But me and my mom was just like sisters. We would talk all the time and laugh about different things all the time. She started going downhill. We was going to chemo with her. Every two or three weeks she had chemo, you know, we was going to chemo with her. And then to me, I think she just gave up, because I remember the day just as well. We were sitting in a doctor's office, and one of the doctors came in that wasn't her regular doctor and checked her, and he told her she was going to die. And that really upset me, because I felt like that wasn't on his place. I said, I always knew she was going to die, but it wasn't your place to tell her. It was her doctor's place, and her doctor had already informed me, because she kept telling me, whatever you want to do with your mom, just do it. That told me right then that she didn't have long. But I think he was really out of his place to come in there and tell her like that. Then she started going downhill when he told her she was going to die. But
yeah, I said quicker, yeah, because it's a mental thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so my mom died October the 19th, 2013.
Okay, so let's pause for a minute. So here you are, you've gone through all these emotional things. I just want to pause on your mom for a second.
Okay.
What's your emotional state at this point in time of losing your mother? What's going through your mind? What are you thinking?
First, I've been praying about I've been angry. You know, and I know the Bible says that once pointed unto man that died, and after death didn't come to judgment. And I know we have to leave here, but I've been really angry about losing my mom. I don't know if it's me being selfish, but I have seen a lot of people come through, you know, a lot of situations and don't die. But I know that's being selfish of me, because her time had just ran out. She was 82 when she passed, and she lived a good life. But I can't wrap my mind around her being 82, because she was just 82 in age. My mama being 82, and my mom died. I still haven't accepted yet. Still haven't accepted
right.
it yet.
I appreciate your honesty. I think it's important for people to embrace the emotion that they're in. The Bible says to be angry and sin not. It doesn't say don't be angry, and that angry it's
That's
anger
right.
is a sin. The anger is not a
That's
sin.
Right.
It's how you allow that anger to be expressed and how you deal with it, because it has to be dealt with, or else it will deal with you, and you will end up becoming
right.
bitter and useful in your life, and probably ill, because they know now that bitterness and anger and all those negative emotions bring sickness into your body. But
right.
what I like about what you're saying is you're being honest before God to say, listen, I'm angry about this. You know,
I
loved her. I missed her.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had more time with her. And that's
mm-hmm.
how healing is able to happen, when you're
mm-hmm.
honest about that emotion. So I'm very glad that you shared that with us. Now, almost exactly a year to the day, I couldn't believe it when I was reading your bio, your sister passes.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the time leading up to that and when she passed away.
We were still so emotional, you know, trying to deal with my mom. And then my sister was back and forth in the hospital. But I do thank God that my mom passed before my sister, because if my sister had to pass first, that would have knocked my mom right over the edge. And it was like we was back and forth to the hospital to her, and I kept saying, Lord, what is it that you're trying to say to the family? What do we need to do? What is it? And I couldn't get a clarification, so I kept saying, okay, I can't do nothing about your will. Your will is your will. So she was in the hospital. I came on back to Georgia because I couldn't deal with it. I just couldn't deal with seeing her die, but the rest of the family was up there. And then when she passed, they called me, and it was October 11th of 2014. And I kept saying, God, what is it? What do we need to do? What are you trying to get across to the family? And right now today, I still haven't got the clarification yet of what he's trying to tell us, because he came back again January of this year and took my cousin at the age of 57. She had lung cancer, but she was sick. She got diagnosed in 2008 for everybody, but she died January 26th of 2016. And I'm like, God, what is it? What is it do we need to do? And I still, like I said, I still haven't got clarification of what is he trying to tell this family, or what is it that we're doing wrong and he's not approving. Through it all, I'm still trying to stay strong and still trying to do the things that he wants me to do. But sometimes it gets real hard, and sometimes I do feel like giving up. But I'm still standing. Mm-hmm. I do have my mother-in-law left, and I call and I talk with her. And a lot of times I don't call and I talk with her because I be so hurt that God ain't got my mom. I want to talk to my mom. But she's really a mother to me. She's a mother to me. But it's like I want to talk to my mama, and I want to say it in a selfish way, because she'll give me the skin off of her back if she had to. So it's just that I want to talk to my mama. Nobody can replace your mama. I don't care how they stand in and how they step in to be a mother to you. It's still nobody can replace, you know, your mother. You know, she's really there for, you know, me and the kids and stuff.
Well, that is one of the things I want to ask you, because you have gone from trauma to trauma to trauma. What kind of support have you been getting? You know, emotional, spiritual, psychological. I mean, because that's one of the things that I find, especially with us as minority races, we don't tend to get that actual support that we need to become emotionally healthy or mentally healthy, right? So what kind of supports were you able to build around you and seek out? Your mother-in-law is one, and what else do you
have? Yes, she's one. And my husband is another one. And I was going to counseling, but my counselor seems to think I was getting better. To me, I don't think I was getting better. I think I need more counseling as far as the death go, because it just seemed like it just study happening. And then my son didn't appeal to the appellate court like three times, and he studied getting denied. And it's like, wow, what is going on? What is going on? And I also get support from the kids and the grandkids. They keep me laughing and they keep me going. And then when I really get bogged down, I'll start writing. Believe it or not, I finished that first book, and I then started three more books after that. I finished the second one, too. The second book is the ending to the first book. So when I get deep down in my feelings like that, I'll just grab my pen and paper and start writing.
Okay, well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about your books and have people hear about what you are actually sharing. Before we go to our break, I want to actually talk to you and the listeners. It's interesting because last week I was reading Job and looking at those initial chapters, first six chapters or so of Job. And, you know, there is that thought that still prevails that if something is negative is happening in your life, that it's got to be because you're paying a price for something.
That's right.
We're used to painting God that picture like he's up there waiting to drop this, you know, hammer on our heads. But that's really not who he is. And we see that in Job's particular situation, he was actually not guilty of anything. It was
That's
because
right.
of what God knew was in him and that he would not deny him, he wouldn't forsake him, that Job was not going to turn his back on God, he was not going to curse God and die, that
That's
God
right.
used all that pain for him not only to be an example to the people in his life during his lifetime, but little did Job know that his story would be history for all mankind to be able to read throughout the history of this world that we're living in. He had no idea that his story would have that much weight. And I speak to a lot of people on the show, and many of them have gone through the complete process so that they can say, well, I was there and now I'm here. But what
That's
I
right.
Think is important about your story is, though you have evolved from where you initially were in 2007, 2009, 2011, 2013, you're still in the process. You're still in the making. And we will see years down the line how God will use you to be able to comfort, minister to, help, and speak to other lives
That's right.
who are going through this type of pain and have no answers, and that you will be able to supply a comfort in a way that no one else can. Because unless you have experienced something for yourself, you really can't guide someone else through that process. You know, I can
That's
give
right.
them comforting words and comforting scriptures, but I won't have empathy because I didn't go through that thing. It's like when I have my book Don't Give Up and Win, or Survival Guide to Renewed Virginity, because I have walked out celibacy and abstinence to its complete end, right? And so
right.
I can talk someone through that other than just have, you know, gotten married right out of college and know that that's what the Bible said, but never really experienced how to walk it out. So I can't really
that's
tell
right.
you how to walk it out. So I would right. encourage you that even in the midst of all of this, God has a purpose and a plan specifically for you in the midst of all of this. And keep praying for your son and your family, because they need your prayers to cover them so that they can have a better life in the Lord. And that's the key. And for those who are listening, I want to remind you of Romans 10, 9 and 10, which says this: if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe
that's
in your
right.
heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And that's where it begins. If Anne didn't have that relationship as her anchor, I guarantee you she would have already lost her mind. She would have already done something crazy in society. But because the Lord's strength and power is her anchor, she's able to admit, hey, I'm angry. Hey, I'm hurt. Hey, I'm going
right.
through. But God, I'm not leaving your side. When we come back, we'll talk more.
One of my favorite songs.
Show me the way.
Oh, yeah. need is you. Listen, Doug. Listen. When I turn to my right, evil is on every hand.
Nothing but trouble.
No joy and peace to be found. When I look to my left, my confusion on every hand.
Nothing but
trouble. War and rumors of wars are taking over our land. Yes, it is.
Melvin, you know what?
Oh, my.
When trouble comes,
be that way sometimes.
And my friends, I'll feel that.
I found out all I need, Lord, all I need is you.
All I need,
oh Lord, all I need is you.
You
told me is just call on your holy name. And right now, Lord, I need you. I just want you to know I need you, Lord.
All I need.
Anybody who need him tonight
is you.
Anybody who need him tonight, anybody that's going through need him.
All I need
is you, Lord.
You
said in your word that you'll be a burden bearer for me, Lord. Anybody know you lift your burdens tonight? Won't he lift up above your head? Anybody know there's power in his name? Jesus. There's a healing in your name, Lord.
All I need
is you.
Is you.
Somebody says you're like you got here all by yourself. Let me just tell you something. You don't own anything. God just lent it to you for a little while. You ought to be thankful. You ought to be grateful. You ought to just be grateful that God is there for you.
All I need
is you.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back in the final part of our show, and we are talking with Raji Ann Mabry. And the Lord has taken her through and is taking her through many challenges. And you have put your pen to paper. And it was really just last week's show we were sharing how important it is to write and to journal when you are going through experiences in life, good or bad, but definitely bad. And so talk to us about how you started to put pen to paper and what made you decide, you know, I'm going to share this with the public and make these books.
First of all, the title of the first book is The Day I Met Myself. But my son going to prison gave me that title, but that ain't what the book's about. And I was kind of leery of not speaking about the book because the type of show that you're doing and the type of book that it is. But I prayed and I asked God to just let the listeners understand that the book is real life. And what the book is about is about a relationship with a married couple and the husband cheating. And so it was about, like I said in the beginning, the book was going to be about my life. But I really didn't want the world to know the turmoil I was going through because I hadn't accepted it, and I still haven't accepted it. So I just felt like it wasn't the world business as long as I'm not all right with it. And so I just turned the book around. I kept the title there. I met myself. I just turned the book around and made it out of a romance love story where a couple moved into a neighborhood and her husband started cheating with the neighbor. And I said, well, Lord, and I'm not going to get deep into the book. And the first book that I wrote is the ending to the second book I'm ending. And that title is The Day I Met Myself, Part 2, Tell No More Lies. That's that title. Mm. But what I don't want is people to judge me by my books. And I just pray that they don't, because the books is based off of everyday living. So if you can't judge everyday living, then you can't judge the books.
Well, listen, when you look at Mr. Tyler Perry's works, right? One of the things that people related about his work was the fact that he was dealing with real issues, right? He was dealing with cheating. He was dealing with going to jail. He was dealing with, so he wasn't trying to, I think we're now at a place in Christian media where we understand we need to tell the whole story in order for the power of God to show up, right? The problem lies in when we share a story and we don't shed that light, flashlight in there. We don't have the inkling of that God voice, that God conscience that says, you know what, you need to make a turn, you need to make a shift. And that was the redemptive power of Tyler Perry's plays and movies, is because it was this moment where someone gets to be introduced to who God is, whether it's one character, whether they say yes or no, because not everyone says yes, right? Because that's real life.
That's right.
But the fact that light is shown in there, and also what I appreciate about Mr. Perry's work is that there are consequences. There are consequences to your actions. So if it means that you end up with HIV/AIDS, or your body's not the same, or you have to do time in prison, there are consequences to action. So it's not an issue of my show. Really, I've had every type of person on the show. People with drugs, people who have committed actual crimes, people who guess she looked as sweet. I told her on the show, I said, you look as sweet as the driven snow. And she talked about being such a furious teen that she wanted to actually cut someone's baby out of their belly, right? So it's important.
Wow.
This is what we look like without God.
Right.
This is what we look like in the decisions that we make when God is not the priority in our life, and then we move forward. So thank you for sharing that. I want to ask you about your son today. You know, I've had a number of guests on the show who actually met the Lord for real in prison. And Michael Barrett was on the show, and he did, I believe, 19 years in state penitentiary. I mean, no joke jail, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And he said halfway through his time, he was still on the hustle. It wasn't until the latter half that the Lord met him there, and now he and his wife are doing fantastic things for God. So where is your son mentally and emotionally now? What's his focus on his future?
He been gone for like almost 8 years. He rebelling still. He's rebelling still. And I don't know. He's angry. He's still angry. But like I tell him all the time, you have to be angry with you because you made your choice. So he's still angry.
One of the keys is, you know, as you are able to allow God's peace to help you deal with your anger, it will help to release him also. But keep praying. Keep praying, and I will see that book by Michael Barrett is phenomenal because he's also very real in his book. He talks about from his childhood because his dad was a kingpin and how that life was almost targeted for him. And he actually had made the decision to walk away from it and cut all ties, and it was after that he got arrested. So, you know, there's always this feeling of injustice and that, you know, it's unfair, the sentence was unfair and, you know, all those type of things. But like you say, at the end of the day, he still has power. There's so many stories I've heard of gentlemen who change and women who change in prison and how the system then changed to accommodate their change. It blows my mind that God can move that way within that type of system. And so it is very possible for him. How can people connect with you, find you on social media or your website?
Well, right now I am on Facebook and Twitter.
What's your Facebook and Twitter name?
At Raji Mabry at yahoo.com.
Okay, so if I go onto Facebook and just type in Raji Mabry, I'll find you.
You sure will. You sure will.
Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I really appreciate it having you.
Okay, you're very welcome.
To my listeners, as you know, I always say, continue to be your very best hero because the greatest hero of all said that you are worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next time, God bless.
Oh, they tell me, oh, man. evening, God.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.